When protesters challenge a dictator, how does the military figure into political change? Well, in Egypt, the military sided with the protesters, but the situation is radically different in Bahrain, where the military has remained firmly loyal to King Al-Khalifa. And then there's Libya, where there seems to be a lot of questions about whose side the military is on, and we want to figure some of this out. Joining us is our friend David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, and a weekly guest on New York Public Radio WQXR's The Washington Report. David, good morning.
Morning.
David, you have a piece in the Times called When Armies Decide. And in that piece, you write that when authoritarian regimes are challenged, the military is almost always confronted with a choice. What's the choice?
Well, the choice, put most simply, is whether or not to back change within the regime or whether to start shooting. And in Egypt, they made the choice pretty early. You never saw a moment where the military took on the protesters directly. And in conversations that many of the military chiefs were having with their counterparts back in Washington, they made it pretty clear that they viewed President Mubarak as a sort of 82-year-old pharaoh who had no palatable successor, and they just didn't see the value in investing in him much further. Now, you've seen the opposite happen in Libya, where, of course, Muammar Gaddafi has been around longer than Mubarak was, you know, four decades. We're talking Castro lengths at this point, right, or just shy of that. And yet, so far, they do not appear to have defected in any significant numbers. Now, they also haven't, as we just heard out of the news report, won control of some of the cities. So you have to wonder how this is going to be managed, and a lot of this depends on how much faith the military puts in Gaddafi's son, Saeed.
The Libya question raises an important question in Libya, to my mind. Now, we don't know exactly what the dynamic is in Libya. Let's stipulate that. We don't have as many facts as we want. But Saeed is stressing the tribal nature of Libya. There are protesters tweeting, at least, that they think elements of the army have helped take control of Benghazi. Come save us in Tripoli, they say. How does the army play into it in Libya? If it is so very tribal, could an army in a state like that be divided along tribal lines, and what would happen?
They certainly could be. Now, you've also got the tribal element in Bahrain as well, and this is all different from Egypt, where we did not have these kind of tribal divisions. In Bahrain, it may be a simpler call because the government is a Shia minority, and the Sunnis, who are the majority in the country, have never really been allowed into the serious ranks of the army. They've been considered to be potential Iranian spies, or at least so the Bahraini officials have said to their American counterparts over the years. Now, Libya is a much more complex case. And it's very hard to know first how the army would break down because there isn't the kind of interplay, obviously, between the Libyan army and the U.S. So American officers don't have a real vision into what's happening in the Libyan army. And secondly, the place is a total news black hole. We don't have anybody on the ground. There are no Western reporters there. And so you're sort of completely relying on what little you can get over Twitter and other electronic means, and those aren't terribly reliable.
Right. Well, David Sanger, a Washington correspondent for The New York Times, I've got to ask you just another question about the power of the military. We do know that there are some fractures and some divides within the military. It's not a monolithic unit in the way that we thought of the Egyptian army. And I got to wonder if the Libyan military could actually oust Gaddafi in order to preserve order in Libya in the way that the Egyptian army did.
They could, but it would depend very much on whether or not the upper leadership, first of all, believes that they had a future and that the army has a future without the Gaddafi family. Because remember, in that case, they wouldn't have to just oust Gaddafi. They'd have to oust his son as well. So,
which son? Which son? Are you talking about? We heard from Saif on the air, but the Libyan National Security Advisor is Gaddafi's other son, who's the two kids are rivals.
That's right. And you know, there has been an assumption that over time that Saif was probably the successor, but we again don't know, you know, that much about the family dynamic that is taking place, or who's got the greater loyalty within the army. So the most interesting thing I think that you heard Saif say was that there could be a civil war. Well, there could be a civil war across many lines. It could be tribal. It could be a civil war within the family. And the army itself could split up. You know, this is not an uncommon set of rumors in these kinds of cases. Those who remember back to Tiananmen Square, there were rumors at that time that the People's Liberation Army had rogue units that were splitting away from the government. It turned out that wasn't the case. This is a very common thing, and it's also a rumor that the protesters have a great interest in propagating.
David Sanger, before we let you go, it sounds to me like your thesis indicates that if you were an American, let's say, or a European official who wanted to influence events in one of these countries, you wouldn't necessarily talk to the protesters. You would focus your future plans on the army and trying to help them find a way forward with what they want to do.
Well, first of all, the protesters were disorganized in Egypt, and same thing in Bahrain. So the only people that the U.S. government could talk to were the leadership and the army. In Bahrain, because the leaders were allies, they could speak with them, and the army seems to have stuck with them. In Libya, I'm not sure there's any real communication underway, at least in an official level, with anybody in the Libyan government, since the relations have been so strained. They only began to get back on their feet after Libya gave up its nuclear weapons program in 2003. And even then, you've not heard Gaddafi warm up to the United States very much.
And relations strained even further with the release of the Pan Am bomber back to Libya, which has enraged a lot of Americans. Doesn't sound like we have a lot of levers to pull inside Libya right now with protesters.
Remember, this one is not about us.
Right, exactly. David Sanger, well put. David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. David is also weekly guest on the Washington Report from New York Public Radio's WQXR. He writes in the New York Times, When Armies Decide. Thank you, David.
We've got coverage and analysis on everything about the Middle East. You can head over to our website, thetakeaway.org. While you're there, put your international knowledge to the test. You can match the flags to the countries that they belong to in the Middle East. And that, let me tell you, this quiz is tough.
There's so many quizzes on this show. We got personality tests, flag quizzes. I'm starting to feel like a lab rat here.
Right, but the answer to the quiz on who should we thank today, we want to say thank you to Jim Colgan and Caitlin Schamberg, members of our web team. Do them a favor by going and downloading our iPhone app at thetakeaway.org. That always gives them goosebumps. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry this week. This is The Takeaway.